I did put the videos together. I want you to know that. It's great. Happy Mother's Day with all our moms. Stand up. Let us give you a big hand. Yes. Yeah, we love our moms. Love your moms. Yeah. All right. Be seated. God bless you. God bless you. Where would we be without you? Well, today is the day. I got monitors or something going on. Today is the day that I get to talk about women, and I can say anything I want to, and it's okay. I can do it. So here I go. In the Bible, I'm still getting something. I don't know. Can you help me? In the very first book of the Bible, in the very first pages of the first book of the Bible, we read about the very first woman. Her name is Eve, and he gives us a description of her. And then in the last book of the Bible, in the very last pages of the Bible, we read about the last woman, the Lamb's wife, the New Jerusalem that comes down out of heaven. Glorious church of Jesus Christ. That's the last woman. And all in between, we're reading about all these women. And one thing that it's constantly telling us about women is, first of all, they're beautiful. Right, guys? And then, secondly of all, they're mysterious. To say the least. A guy can live with a woman all of his life, as have I, and still not know how they're going to respond in specific situations. You know, we suspect it, but we never know because they're so mysterious. They're so mysterious. And so we learn this about women. And women also, you know, they have needs. They have needs. A woman needs for someone to capture her, for someone to rescue her, for someone to sweep her up and fight for her. And they need her knight in shining armor to come capture and secure her. That's what women need. They need us guys to do that. And if we don't do it, bad things happen. When a man doesn't do that, I've found in scriptures that when a guy doesn't do that for his woman, bad things happen all the time. For example, with Adam and Eve. Eve wasn't fought for by Adam. He didn't capture her. He didn't secure her. But Satan did. Satan came and captured her, took her, used her. Abraham, the father of the faithful, was the same thing. He should have fought for Sarah. He didn't. He should have secured her. He didn't. But he let Pharaoh, he let Abimelech come and get her. And had God not intervened there, there'd be no family of the faithful. Bad things happen when a man doesn't fight for and secure and capture and sweep up his woman. She needs that. David captured Bathsheba. Now, that wasn't a good thing, which tells us that if we don't secure and capture our own women, somebody else will. And Uriah, the wife of the husband of Bathsheba, seemed to be more interested in playing his games, his war, his job, than being home with her. Jesus shows us the real way that a man secures and captures and sweeps away his woman. He does it with a bride in Ephesians chapter 5. He says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Love her, cherish her, sweep her up, protect her, fight for her. Love her. And then we have this woman who will love us back, who will nearly worship us, who will take care of us the way we needed to be taken care of because we've taken care of them. So we see all these things in the scriptures about a woman, and all those things would be good to talk about. But the thing I really want to talk about today is the part of a woman that is formed because of who she is and why she is, and specifically a mother. What internally happens to her? What happens? What identifies this being, this mysterious creature, this woman? A man. We form our identities by what we do. From where we came, our past, whatever. That forms our identities. For example, it was David the king. He was identified as the king. It was Peter and James and John and Andrew the fishermen. But then it was the apostles. So they're identified by what they do or from where they came. It was John the Baptist or baptizer, what he did, but he was also John, the son of Zechariah. It was Jesus of Nazareth, but it was also Jesus the carpenter, or Joseph the carpenter. So what we see is with a guy in the scriptures, we learn that we form our identities by what we do and from our past and what we've done in our past. Those things are what forms our identities. It's not that way with a woman. A woman in the scriptures, her identity is formed by her relationships. For example, it was Lot's wife. It's Mary, mother of Jesus. It was Peter's mother-in-law. It's always they're formed by their relationships. It's actually interesting. I've mentioned Bathsheba. It's Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah, the Hittite, not the wife of David, because her identity was formed by her adultery. She was married to the Hittite, Uriah, but then she was formed. And when you think of Bathsheba, her identity comes because of her adulterous situation with David. So a woman, her identity, we learn, is formed because of her relationships or with what and who she relates to, her children. And a mother is identified because she identifies, and her identity is formed because of her children and the relationship that she has with them. A wife, is her identity is formed because of the relationship she has with her husband. Now, I want to say this. See, a woman doesn't become a mother because she births a child, no more than a man becomes a father because he sires a child. A woman becomes a mother because she identifies and has a relationship with that child. So, with that said, I want to read our passage today, and then we'll discuss this just a little bit more. So, in 1 Kings chapter 3 and verse 16, and I want you to look at your title on your notes if you've got it. The title of our lesson today is Two Prostitutes, One Mother, and a Sword. Someone told me before service, he says it sounded like my days in Mexico before I got married. Two prostitutes, a mother, and a sword. All right, here we go. 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 16 says, now two prostitutes came to the king and stood before him. One of them said, my lord, this woman and I live in the same house. I had a baby while she was there with me. The third day after my child was born, this woman also had a baby. We were alone. There was no one in the house but us, but the two of us. During the night, this woman's son died because she lay on him. So she got up in the middle of the night and took my son from my side while your servant was asleep. She put him by her breast and put her dead son by my breast. The next morning, I got up to nurse my son, and he was dead. But when I looked at him closely in the morning light, I saw that it wasn't the son I had born. The other mother said, no, the living son is my son. The dead one is yours. But the first one insisted, no, the dead one is yours. The living one is mine. And so they argued before the king. The king said, this one says, my son is alive and your son is dead. While that one says, no, your son is dead and mine is alive. Then the king said, bring me a sword. So they brought a sword for the king. He then gave an order, cut the living child in two and give half to one and half to the other. And the woman whose son was alive was filled with compassion for her son and said to the king, please, my lord, give her the living baby. Don't kill him. But the other said, neither I nor you shall have him. Cut him in two. Then the king gave his ruling. Give the living baby to the first woman. Do not kill him. She is his mother. When all Israel heard the verdict the king had given, they held the king in awe because they saw that he had wisdom from God to administer justice. Two prostitutes, one mother, and a sword. I normally wouldn't use two prostitutes as examples on Mother's Day. And I did wrestle with it, and my wife had me wrestling with it. She says, are you going to talk about prostitutes on Mother's Day? She wasn't a wife. And I thought, well, you know what? It's not Wife's Day. What day is it? It's Mother's Day. Are all wives mothers? No. Are all mothers wives? Did I say that correctly? And all mothers aren't saints, so it's not All Saints Day either, you see. And so I really felt impressed to preach from this passage, and I couldn't quite get a handle on it. But I realized, you know, mothers here, mothers that we all know, conceived before they became a wife. And all mothers aren't saints. And the thing that identifies a mother isn't that she's married or isn't that she's perfect. But she's identified and relates and has a relationship with her child. That's what a mother is. So, these two hookers live together. And as the story goes, let's call them hooker number one and hooker number two, just for clarity in our study. Hooker number one conceived, was pregnant. And shortly thereafter, hooker number two conceived and became pregnant. And now, in those days, contraception was guesswork. I mean, it wasn't like we have today. So contraception was guesswork and actually an occupational hazard for them. You understand. But they had these babies. They conceived and birthed these innocent children. These innocent little children. Did they even know who their daddy was? Did they know who fathered them? Probably not, possibly not, for sure. But I want to ask you this, do you think God knew? Did God know who the father was? I'll carry it just a little bit further. Do you think these babies surprised God? Oh my gosh, oh, the hookers are pregnant. No. You see, I want to get our heads wrapped around this thought that I'm trying to project to you. You see, mother identifies with the child. That's what makes her a mother. I want to read you just a couple of scriptures concerning this particular thought. In Psalms 139:13, it says this, for you here is God. For God, you created my inmost being. God, you knit me together in my mother's womb. God not only knew these babies and loved these babies, but he also understood that these, what we would call illegitimate babies, he formed them. He's the one who put them together in the hooker's womb. Psalms 127:3 says, children are a gift from the Lord. God gave these babies as a gift to the hookers. They are a reward from him. What? I don't understand that. God does. Psalms 139:16. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. God knew all about these babies. He knew how they would be born, who their parents would be. All their days were written even before they took their first breath. And sadly, one of them had a very short book. God doesn't see illegitimate children like we do. God sees children that he's planned for, that he's woven and formed together. God loved these children. And beyond that, God loved these women. He loved these hookers. Even with all their faults and their immorality, and I'm in no way saying immorality is to be applauded. You understand that. That's not my point. But my point is that all moms have faults. All moms mess up. And I'm not saying that on Mother's Day to put moms down. I'm saying that to lift moms up. Because, Mom, you'll beat yourself up with your faults. You'll beat yourself down with your faults. You won't be able to be the mother that you could be because you're constantly blaming yourself for your failures. No mother's perfect. You're not going to do life perfectly. But if there's anybody that all of us should forgive, right, it's mama, right? We can forgive mama We can't forgive anybody else. We can forgive mama, right? Even with all of her faults. Why is that? Because mama always forgives us. No matter what we've ever done, right? Mama forgives. Mama loves us. Mama has identified with us to such a degree that she understands us even when we mess up. She loves us. She knows us. She understands even our faults. And she forgives us. She's like Jesus there. But these women birthed these babies, and not only birthed them, but they decided to keep them, to raise them, to love them. I wonder how that would roll out today in our society of choice and abortion. I don't know if it would have the same ending. What would happen today? But what we do find is some insight here. You see, these women in that society, more than our society, children had value. And what I mean by that is that as parents grew old, then if they didn't have children, they didn't have nursing homes like they have today. If they didn't have children, there was no place for the children, for the old parents to go. The children took care of the parents, as it should be today. But in that society, there were no other places to go. So it was the son's duty to take care of the mother. And if there wasn't a son, then it would be the daughter's duty to take care of the parents. And that's what we see with Peter's mother-in-law. Obviously, there wasn't a son for that Peter's brother, for of Peter's wife. No son for her to go to. So she was living with Peter and her daughter. And so in that society, we see this. Now, what we understand then is there was more motive for them than just being righteous. This woman with this dastardly plan was not just being righteous. She was trying to plan her destiny, her future. So it was not quite as righteous, but it does give us insight as to why she devised such an evil plan to take another woman's child. So she took the child. The babies were born. They're born 3 days apart. And the hooker number two, in the middle of the night, either sat upon or rolled over upon her infant, and either smothered the infant or crushed the infant, but at any rate, the infant died. Rather than mourning for the child, what she did instead was devise this plan. And here we see that she's not a mother. She's a deceptive woman. She devised this dastardly plan to swap babies, to take her dead baby and swap it for the alive baby of hooker number one. And so she did it. And here we see again her motherlessness, because she thought she could get away with it. You're not going to pull that on a real mom. You see, when hooker number one woke up and found this dead baby, of course, both of them would have been shocked. The shock factor that would have been involved with finding that dead infant. And now both of them have experienced this. But when she began to examine that baby, she saw something. Let me read this to you. It's in verse 21 that we read. It says, "But when I looked at him closely in the morning light, I saw that it wasn't the son I had born." Now, this fascinates me. This fascinates me how mothers can do that. Now, it's probably just me, but I can't tell a lot of difference in three-day-old babies. I mean, they all kind of look the same to me. I'll tell you a story. We had one of our children. I won't say which one because, but anyway, we were going. In those days, you couldn't keep the baby in the room with you like you can today. You only had specific times that you could see the baby, feed the baby. Then other times you had to go to the nursery and look through a window to see the children. So Judy and I were walking to the nursery to look at our children. And from the position that we stood, I couldn't see the names on the bassinets. And I didn't know which one was mine. Now, I eliminated it some, you know. Ours didn't have any hair. And some of them had hair. And some of them had different skin tones. And you know, I mean, so I could eliminate it down some, but still there was a bunch of babies in there, and I didn't know which one was mine. And I didn't want to be dumb dad, you know. I wanted to know who my kid was. And so I'm scouring which one is mine. thinking to myself. And Judy's standing over here, and so I peripherally look over here to see which one she's looking at, hoping they'd give me some direction at least, you know. And she's looking at me because she knows I'm lost. She's just waiting to see if I'll ask her which one is ours. So finally I did. I said, okay, Mom. Okay, Judy, which one's ours? And she has no problem with it. I mean, even today, this is 40-something years later. I said 40-something because that way they don't know which one I'm talking about. But 40-something years later, they will now, though. When I look at the infant pictures of our children and I put them side by side, I still have to ask her, which one is this? And she has no problems with that. She sees it. She knows it. And mothers do that. Now, here's the thing. You see, mothers identify with the children. In the first moments and minutes of that baby's life, the mother's going to look over that child every inch. The first opportunity they get, they're going to know that baby as well as they know their own self. They're going to know that baby. And this mother, this is how we see she's a mother, because I had already identified with this baby just within a few days. So hooker number two thinks she's going to pull one off here. She's not going to do it. Now, dads, we're not kind of like that, are we? We're thinking we're going to do for them. We're going to work. We're going to provide for them. We're going to make sure they get to school. We're going to make sure they get to do this. They're going to make sure they get to do that. You know, we're thinking like that. What we're going to do for them, because that's how we identify. We form our identities by what we do. But mom's not like that. Mom's identifying with that baby. Mom's hooking up with this child. She's learning this child. So these two women are now in battle. They're battling over this child. One of them is mother. One of them is a deceiver, is a liar. Someone you don't want for a mother. But one of them is a real mother. And they're battling and they're going at it back and forth. Now, we don't know how long this battle went. You know, you just don't walk up to King Solomon and say, hey, I want you to judge our case. It had to go through the court system. It had to go through the process. It had to do due process. Magistrates and up the levels and all the things that you have to go through. I mean, that would be like going to Supreme Court. The Supreme Court only hears those cases that are so complicated that they have to determine from our Constitution. So to get to King Solomon, this thing had gone through its stages. It had taken some time. But she didn't stop. She didn't give up. And this is what I want us to see here. You see, that's the thing about a mother. She won't give up on her kid. She'll never give up on him. I have a sister-in-law. It amazes me. It just amazes me how she doesn't give up on those kids. We guys aren't like that. Get out of my house. I don't ever want to talk to you again. Leave us alone. We'll get in fights with them. But not mom. Mom's going to hold and fight for them and struggle for them. You know, so here's this hooker number one fighting for it, struggling for her children. So now they find themselves bowed before King Solomon. Bowed before him. Here's the point I want us to see. A great mom not only won't give up, but a great mom is always going to go before the throne for her children. She's going to go before the throne of God pleading for her children. She's never going to give up. She's pleading. She's fighting for. She's praying for. And a mother identifies with her child through God, through prayer. She's praying for and pleading for that child. Solomon says, I don't know what to tell you. You say yours is alive and hers is dead. You say yours is alive and hers is dead. I don't know. So I'm just going to give you a big test. I'm going to throw it to an ultimate test for you, Mama. Bring me a sword. Bring me a sword. Now, you know, they have to be wondering, what are you going to do with a sword? You going to kill us? You know, what's going on? They bring him a sword. He said, give the order. He says, cut the alive child in two. Give half to one and half to the other. Wow. What a test. We'll read 1 Kings 3:26. The woman whose son was alive, the real mom, was filled with compassion for her son and said to the king, please, my lord, give her the living baby. Don't kill him. But the other said, the one that wasn't the mother, just a woman, the other said, neither I nor you shall have him, cut him in two. This woman had already sacrificed. She had sacrificed her pride. I mean, you know, if no one knew she was a hooker, a prostitute before, they do now. I mean, imagine what the media did with it. She was smeared, right? She'd given up probably all of her money, sacrificed all of her money for this child as well. Now, going through all the court systems, we all know what that entails. All the time that was involved here, we don't know how much time this took. But the point that I want to point out to us is this is getting very close to the real identity of a mother. You see, a real mother, a mother who is really a mother, sacrifices for the child. To me, it's here they shine and they look like Jesus. First of all, you give up your bodies, right? You just kind of crucify that old person. You've worked so hard for that body. You want to look slick, you know, you want to keep your weight and your figure and all that stuff. And all of a sudden, you explode. You know, your legs swell, your feet swell, your belly swells, everything's big. Your stretch marks. You give up your body for that baby. And then, beyond that, you know, you're going to give up your time. You know, whatever that kid wants to do, that's what you'll do. You'll sacrifice your time to do whatever it is that they want to do. No matter what time of day or night it is. When they call mama, my kids never called out in the middle of the night, "Daddy! Mama, I'm sick." Never, "Daddy." Praise God. Give up your money. You'll use your money. My wife tells the story of that when she wanted something that her mother would work all week, and she didn't make that much money, but she would work all week just to buy Judy a pocketbook or an outfit or something that Judy wanted. Mom sacrificed for us. They'll sacrifice everything. They'll sacrifice your personal goals. Whatever it is that you wanted to do in life, you'll shelve them. Maybe never pick them up again to make sure that your children get to do what they want to do because you have identified with them. You give up your health. Middle of the night, you're sick. You're the one that's really sick. But if one of them calls out, "Mama, I'm sick," it doesn't matter. You give up your health. And if you have to, you'll even give up your life for your children. And this is what this woman is doing. She would prefer that somebody else raise that child than for that child to die. She wanted that child to live so desperately, have a great life so desperately, she was willing to even sacrifice the child if necessary. Now, moms are like this. This is how you identify a real mother. Now, you know, we say all of this, but how many of us... See, moms will use that against you because they do sacrifice so much. They'll use that against you. How many of you have ever had your mom stick her finger in your face and say, "After all I've done for you, and this is what I get? You say that to me after all I've done for you." And they'll just use that on you. But they're right. Right? They're right. They have given it all up for you. They're right. But here's the thing I want to say to you. Is that this is their identifying with us. A mom's identifying with that child. Here's the real truth, is they wouldn't have it any other way. Not a real mom. A real mom, hear me, now she won't tell you this, because you'll use it, but a real mom lives for this. A real mom sacrifices everything for her children, because she has so identified with them. So here's the lesson that I want us to get today. The thing that separated the real mom, hooker number one, from the deceitful woman, hooker number two, was the ability to sacrifice and identify with that child. Solomon said, "Now I know which one it is. Now I know. It's clear as day now. This one's not willing to sacrifice. This one is. I know who the mom is." The thing that identifies a mom is her identity with that child and her willingness to give everything up so that child to have a great life. That's a real mom. If it's a woman, just a woman, it's all about her. If it's a wife, then it's about the husband. If it's a mother, it's about that baby. It's about that child. Now, if it's a wife and a mother, she'll work it out. And if you're a dad and a husband, you need to understand that. Because most times you're going to lose. When it comes between you and that baby, you can forget it. Right? And if you're a smart guy, a wise man, if you got it together, you'll understand that and you'll let her be mama. Now, you probably heard the story. There's a story that I want to relate to you. It's about a mother putting her five-year-old to bed at night. And it's thundering and lightning, big storm going on, winds blowing and howling. It's a bad night. It's a bad storm. She's said the prayers with the baby. She's tucking him in. She's about to turn the lights out and go to bed herself. The little boy looks at mama and says, "Mommy, will you sleep with me tonight?" And she says, "Honey, you know I sleep with Daddy." He puckered up and said, "That big sissy." And with quivering lip, he said, "Please, Mommy, just this one night." So she's pondering it, and she says, "Okay, let me go put my pajamas on and tell your Daddy what I'm doing." And he said, "Guys, we can't be sissies. We've got to understand this mom has identified with this child or these children. And that's what she's about. She's given it all up for them. I've met a lot of sissies, big guys, big men, supposedly. But they're jealous of their own children. Jealous because they're sissies. Let me tell you a story. Let me tell you the truth here. That's not a story, it's the truth. I'll tell you the truth here. If you let your wife be mom, you're going to have a great wife. You got to let her be mom. And the thing that identifies her is her willingness to sacrifice for your children." I want to close it with one more thought that I want to project to you. When Solomon made this decision, everybody oohed and aahed. Let me read it to you in verse 28. It says, "When all Israel heard the verdict the king had given, they held the king in awe, because they saw that he had wisdom from God to administer justice." Now, in the same chapter, just previous to the story that we've just read and looked at, Solomon has just become king. David had died. Solomon gave this big sacrifice thing, and God showed up. And God, as it were, wrote Solomon a blank check and said, "You can have anything you want. Just name it. I'll give it to you." So Solomon didn't ask for wealth. Solomon didn't ask for long life. Solomon didn't ask for power. He didn't ask for anything like that. Solomon asked for, you think I'm about to say wisdom, but that's not what Solomon asked for. Let me show you. Let me show you just to make sure we get it. 1 Kings 3:9 says this. "So give your servant what? A discerning heart." Not wisdom. "So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern or to judge this great people of yours?" You've probably heard that Solomon asked for wisdom. No, he didn't. He asked for a discerning heart. See, the truth of this is that when you have a discerning heart, you know the difference of right and wrong. You discern that. You distinguish that. And then wisdom comes from that. Wisdom just doesn't happen. Wisdom comes because someone has a discerning heart to be able to distinguish between right and wrong. I think that's a great definition for wisdom. And so what Solomon asked for was that. Now, the reason I'm pointing this out is, moms, the thing you need more than anything to save your children is you need a discerning heart. You need to know the difference between right and wrong. Because, man, you've got a lot of judging to do. They're going to try to trick you. They're going to try to fool you, pull it over you. You've got to know where they can spend the night and where they can't. You've got to know where they can go and where they can't go. And you've got to have a discerning heart so you know right and wrong. You've got to know when, how, and where, hear me, to use the sword. Sword's a whole lot better than the rod. What are you talking about? Well, let me show you what the sword really is. Ephesians 6:17. "Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God." That's what you need. You need the Spirit of God. You need the Word of God. There's nothing that's going to give you a discerning heart like the Spirit of God and like the Word of God. What you as mom have got to do, you've got to do this, moms. You've got to go and bow before the throne. You've got to ask God to give you a discerning heart so that you'll be able to distinguish between good and evil, between right and wrong. You've got to be able to help that child. If you want to save your child, you've got to have a discerning heart. You've got to be able to use the sword. It required the sword for Solomon to know which was the right mother. And that's what you've got to have. See, you need wisdom. And you need it. And we guys understand that. And that's why dads always say to their children, go and ask your mom. And that's why. It's because you are discerning the stuff out. We'll buy the car. You tell them where they can go with it. You know, we'll do the things. But man, we depend on you to discern the thing. Let's pray.